Hi.
Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, good evening. This is Nathan. Just let me know if everybody can hear me okay.
Yes.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to be doing the call for Larry tonight, and I will kind of give everyone a little overview. Maybe there's probably some people already on the call that know me, but I've been working with Larry for quite some time. I'm his head coach in his office for everyone in the Inner Circle programs. So I've done these calls before when I have to fill in for Larry. He's actually speaking tonight, and I think Atlanta, I think is what it is. So he had a conflict of getting on the phone. So I will be running the call tonight, answering questions, and also talking a little bit about a topic that Larry wanted me to bring up tonight, since it's your evening. Your evening is either 9 p.m. Eastern or 7 p.m. So it's 9, 8 Central and all the way back until Pacific time. But however, for me, it's currently 3 a.m. because I'm calling in from Belgium, Brussels. I'm in Brussels, Belgium today. And one of the things Larry wanted me to talk about was virtual business and how to do it virtually. So I am going to be answering questions on the call today on behalf of Larry, but I'm also going to be talking just a little bit about virtual business and how I do my business from anywhere in the world, using softwares, tools, human capital, such as virtual assistants or deal hunters and that. So we're going to kick it off here in just a few minutes, get a few more people on the call, want to be in a timely manner. Who do we got? Who do we got on the call tonight? Who's out there tonight?
Ron Lee, Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
All right. Who else do we got? Welcome.
Cara.
Hey. Who else do we got on the call tonight?
Derek from Toledo, Ohio.
Great. Hey, how are you?
Good. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Yeah, some people.
That's fantastic.
Thank you, sir. I know some people I've met already, maybe either at one of Larry's live events, maybe we've chatted on the phone, hey, maybe I'm working with you already, or have in the past as one of Larry's students. Just a quick recap as we kick it off here. I've been working with Larry probably for the past 7 years. I've known him I used to work directly in his office. Some people know me from, I've filled in for Larry before in the past for his Inner Circle call. Hey, how are you?
All right.
Great, great. So I'm just kind of updating everyone that I'm filling in for Larry tonight because he is speaking in Atlanta. This doesn't happen too often to him where he has an overlapping schedule. But so I'm Nathan, and I've been working with Larry for about 7 years. I've known Larry for 7 years, but I've been working more closely with him in Charlotte.
Well, it's nice to hear from the alternate too. You know, that's great.
So if you're just jumping on the call, we're about to kick off. You're going to want to hit like star.
There are 13 participants in the conference. The recording has started. Please announce yourself.
If they sound as though I'm a little loud, it's because I'm on a white Wi-Fi call. I'm trying this to see what the difference is. I've been getting a lot of static lately.
Okay. So what we're going to do is I'm going to kick off the call here. You can just either get on one of the line or the other, and then I'm just going to kick off the call. We got a bunch of people on the line. You're going to want to kill one of those phones there. You can mute yourself as well. I believe it's star 6.
Have you ever filled in for Larry before?
I have, yeah. I filled in for Larry before. It was probably about a year ago. That's how often he does these calls. Like I said, normally Larry is on these calls on a consistent basis. So today, as I open it up here, what I'm going to be talking about is a little bit about virtual investing. Like I said, I've known Larry for 7 years. I've been investing for 12 years. But Larry runs the enterprise business, meaning, you know, Lake Wylie, South Carolina. He's got the building. He, you know, he has employees. He goes to his office every day. I'm more of the lifestyle business guy. And I've worked with Larry on a number of different capacities. I've worked inside his office for a number of years. We've done deals together, all that kind of stuff. But I'm more of the lifestyle kind of business. I'm the guy who's traveling. So while everyone is in the United States, maybe most people are in the United States at 9 p.m. Eastern, or you're in maybe 6 o'clock Pacific or whatever. I'm over in Belgium, Brussels right now, Brussels, Belgium, and it's 3 a.m. for me. So I do more of the lifestyle business. So I'm going to be talking a little bit tonight about building the business virtually, like Larry talks about, you know, how to invest virtually. And actually, before I even met Larry, that's how I built my business, was face-to-face, you know, door knocking, you know, all that kind of stuff, just face-to-face local investing. And it wasn't until I met Larry where I actually moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's when I started investing. Kind of just being around the office is what kind of encouraged me to do this virtual investing. So I've been doing virtual investing for about 5 years, but investing in real estate for about 12. So what I want to do on today's call is I am going to talk a little bit about the virtual investing, maybe answer some questions on how to do that. You know, this year alone, I've been in 3 different countries closing about 7 deals virtually without being in the United States. Mostly, primarily, I live in Uganda, Africa. That's pretty much where I mostly live, and then around the country in different places while I'm traveling. I close deals. So I'll talk a little bit about that, but I first wanted to open it up to everyone or anyone who has some questions about maybe something that they're currently working on, something that they may have a question in the real estate business, maybe networking. I am one of Larry's head coaches, by the way, so that kind of gives me – you have some insight there if you've been – you're obviously in one of Larry's Inner Circle programs. Maybe we've worked together already, or even if we haven't, I do the phone coaching part of Larry's Inner Circle programs. So if anyone signs up for phone coaching, or if anyone signs up for Larry's In the Field mentorship, like if you wanted someone to come out to your local area in your local town – or help you build your power team locally. I've done that for, oh gosh, countless number of Larry students to go out to, you know, their local town, their home base, in their backyard, and show them how to build their real estate business one-on-one for 3 days in their area. So I do those 2 things for Larry with his company. So, you know, I've been doing that for a number of years. And I've been coaching students for about 8 years. So I want to open it up first with any questions that you may have about your real estate business, or whether it's wholesaling or owner financing. So who wants to go first here? And just
I want
first one.
Can I ask you something about HUD?
Sure.
Yeah, actually, right now I'm trying to, because HUD just changed. Like I bid in Alabama, and right now. I'm trying to do the autofiller, the form, but the one I have, it doesn't work that well anymore. I mean, I'm wondering what kind of software or app do you use to autofill the form for to bid on HUD?
There's a form, I believe it's called GobiFlow.
GobiFlow?
GobiFlow. I believe that's the form that's used. But let me do this. I want to get your name because I want to give you the one that Larry uses in his office. They actually do a lot of bidding on HUD.
Okay.
And I will. Yeah. So give me your first, I can do your first name if you like. First and last name. I can look you up.
I forgot all about it.
Wow, it's so noisy. I can't hear.
Yeah. Sorry. Good. Try right now. Okay,
somebody
there's a few callers that have their phone on not unmuted, so if you could mute your line, push, I think it's *6, because the noise is just like overpowering voices.
Okay, so you say GobiFlow. Gopi Flow.
Yeah, and that might be the one for you, but if you give me your name, I can look you up in the system and then email it to you. I want to make sure I give you the one that Larry uses in his office, because they make a boatload of more offers on HUD than I do. I don't do a whole bunch of HUD, so I want to make sure I give you the right one, but I know I've heard of Gobi Flow, and I think there's a few others that Larry has told me about recently.
I think he used something else, but then that one doesn't, I don't know how to use. I was in his 3-day training.
Okay.
And I forgot the name of that one, but that one didn't work for me very well. I didn't know how to use it. So I used a different one. I used RoboFarm, but right now because it changed the system and it doesn't work anymore, because they have a lot of a name field that is similar. Like they have company name, but then they have the same thing for title and also same as the buyer. And then really when I tried to autofill, it kind of all messed up.
It all messed up, huh? Okay. So are you okay with giving me your first and last name?
Yeah. My first name is Sarah with an H. Last name is H-U-A-N-G.
Okay. So what I'll do, Sarah, is I'm going to get that information for you, and I'll shoot it over to you in an email tomorrow.
Okay.
And that way you can have the one that maybe the one that you're referring to in regards to Larry's office. I know that when it comes to software and automation tools, there's quite a few options out there, but I want to make sure I give you the right one that you've heard about from Larry's office.
Okay, great, thanks.
Sure, no problem. All right, anybody want to go next?
I'd like to go there. I had a question about going over like Craigslist ads to find deals. You get a lot of realtors that will throw like MLS listings on there. They'll just dump their whole file on there. If you're now, I know you like virtual. I like virtual also.
Sure.
But this is just like in a local area that I'm referring to.
Sure.
Do I just go on another classified? Because they'll be like from time to time, he'll dump a bunch of his listings on there, MLS listings on there. I know who it is because he's one of the top people in the RIA. And so my question would I just come back to a different time, or just move on from that and then get back with the marketing?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I think Craigslist is a great avenue for working with motivated sellers in real estate. I think Craigslist probably is at the top of the list for using and buying or selling real estate in the classified ads world. Here's my recommendation when it comes to sifting and sorting through Craigslist or any classified ads, whether it's local. Like, for example, let's just pretend it was Cleveland. Your investments were in Cleveland. This clevelandclassifieds.com. So even if it's locally classified, or whether it's something like Backpage.com, Craigslist.com, or any like Oodle.com, there's a whole bunch of classified ads, websites out there, Craigslist being the mother of them all, right? What I would recommend you do is probably get with a virtual assistant, and you want to kind of set up a system or like a pattern where your assistant, your virtual assistant can kind of scrape the data for you. It's a lot of tedious work to go into Craigslist or any classified ad, not just Craigslist alone, but to go through all those classified ads and looking for the right listing. There's actually softwares out there that virtual assistants can use. They don't click into every ad. What they do is they use what's called I'm just going to call it a Craigslist scraper or a classified scraper. They're also known as web scrapers. And what they do is they run this software and then they pull all the data out of websites and then they kind of just, they can put it in a list for you, a nice clean list. And this can filter out all the agent stuff that you do want to avoid. Does that make sense?
Yeah, can you recommend what kind of website scraper that we can use?
Excellent.
Yeah, here's the thing. If you were to go online and like pull up web scraper,
Okay.
I'm sure there's probably going to be like over 10 that pop up. Here's the thing. I don't personally do that myself, and I don't think you should either, because here's what happens. You're going to get all this data, and you're going to be like, it might look like a totally different language to you. It's going to be like completely like, okay, I have all this data. What do I do with it now? Because it's like sifting and sorting. It's not going to look that pretty when you use web scraping. What happens in the background with like web coding and web development is it's going to pull all the data, and then what your VA can do is give you the ones that you specifically want. Now, if you do, I can't say particularly I would recommend one web scraper. I personally don't use it. Here's what I do. I hire a virtual assistant that already uses web scraping tools, and I personally use Upwork.com. That's UPWORK.com. So Upwork.com, you can hire a virtual assistant for really cheap. You can do it by project, or you can hire them by the hour. But web scraping, if you do it on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, shouldn't take them much time. It's not going to take a whole lot of time to pull those listings for you, whether it's daily or twice a week or once a week, however often you want it. So I personally, I would spend a little bit of money on that side of it, maybe $5 or $10 a week to make that happen for for sale by owner ads, motivated seller ads, whatever the criteria is, rather than doing all that work yourself. Because I'll be honest with you, web scraping is an IT kind of specialty. It's not like something you can just go in as easily, maybe as Craigslist, and look through all the pictures and all that stuff. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And also, I'm looking at a higher price range, $150,000 to $300,000 house. And those houses may or may not be motivated sellers. The fact that, like I said, the person that I know, he's one of the chairs over at the local RIA, and he actually owns the realty company. But the thing about it is, there may be motivated sellers within those houses that I'm looking to, put offers on and stuff like that, or find out if they're motivated sellers. And that's just one particular market. And Cleveland, that was a good example, because Cleveland, you're not going to have that problem. They'll come right out and say it in the ad that they're motivated and things like that. But this was just the Toledo market. I noticed there was a lot of garbage, in the summer. And I haven't – I went on other areas and other different places. I've seen a lot of deals. But this particular one, and I'm thinking maybe, that it's the summer – or near the end of the summer is why there are no deals on there right now. I mean, not saying there's no deals, but why they're not, it doesn't look as though there's that many because it's a smaller market. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, markets do change. You bring up a great point. Markets do change. They fluctuate at some points in smaller markets, of course, especially in the smaller market. Sometimes you're going to have a little influx of properties. There's going to be there's going to be a lot more inventory. And other times that inventory will dwindle down and it'll be almost nothing. And what's important with that is, first of all, work, and I always tell this to all the students I work with, first you work a specific state. Pick one state first. Don't jump from state to state when you're investing. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is go deep instead of going wide, okay? And what I mean by deep is, first, don't go like national. Don't go looking for properties all over the country. Right. Don't try to work like, Texas, and don't try to work Georgia at the same time. Just pick one state and then drill down in that state. And then if you find like a small pocket, let's say in Georgia, you find a pocket that, hey, it's kind of drying up and there's not many deals there. That's fine. Just shift to a different county in the same state. All right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That was exactly what I was thinking. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, because a lot of times, what people – it's just human nature. We think like, oh, we have the whole United States and we can just invest everywhere. Well, but every state has different laws. Every state, like just in closing, there's attorney closing states and there's title companies that close in different states. And you don't want to spread yourself too thin. Even just think about your marketing. Marketing in California is very different than marketing to someone in Georgia. Marketing to someone in Maine is very different type of marketing than someone down in Texas. It's just different mindset. So you gotta, if you, the better you know the area, the better you know your market, the more success you're gonna have. So just keep that in mind. You know, as much as we keep real estate, as much as we can do real estate virtually, and we don't have to be in the same state, we still have to know the market we're investing in. And for a personal example, I've been investing in North and South Carolina for 7 years, and I haven't shifted. And I know the markets really well. I got the power teams there. I got, you know, bird dogs and deal hunters out in those areas. But I know the markets really well. When an opportunity comes up and someone says, "Hey Nate, you want to buy a property out in Oklahoma?" I'm like, "No, that's not my market." "Oh, you can make $30,000 or $50,000." Well, no, that's not my market, right? So you gotta stay laser focused, and you'll get great results that way.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Yeah, can
all
you
right,
share
for the
strategy like for your business, what do you do to get more business and how you market?
Sure, yeah. Well, my strategy is unique, and I've customized it over the course of my life. You know, I used to do a lot of direct mail back in the day, and direct mail, you've probably heard this before, direct mail is probably the number one way to work with motivated, to get motivated sellers. However, it is very expensive. It's costly. So that's not always the best option for everyone. And it does, there is a bit of a learning curve. So there's other options to get motivated sellers. Now, when I first started, I was doing more direct mail, and then that shifted over time. My strategy today is you've probably heard of the term bird dogs, right? Have you ever heard of the term bird dogs in the real estate industry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So basically what I've done is I took that and I put it on steroids, okay? What I did was the process of a bird dog is they go out, they find vacant properties, or they find motivated sellers or vacant properties, and then they bring you the address, or they bring you the person who's trying to sell their house because they're motivated. But that's all they do, right? They just give you the contact, or they just give you the address, and that's it. And you pay them a referral fee. You pay them a fee when the deal closes. You pay them anywhere between $500 to $1,000, pretty much, is the average. I've heard other people paying $1,500 and all that. That's fine. Here's what I've done over the years. I created I titled my bird dogs on fire, okay? I've called them deal hunters. Larry would call those people acquisition managers, okay? So what they do is they actually find the property, they find the owner if it's a vacant property, they find the owner, they put the property under contract. So they're making the offer already, they're putting it under contract, they're taking the pictures, and well, after they put it under contract, then I get the contract, then I review the deal. They send me the numbers, I review the contract, and then I say, okay, let's get pictures and video. After that process, after I see pictures and video, if I think it's a good one or a bad one, I'll make the decision after I see the pictures. If it's a good one and I want to move forward, then I'll take over the deal from there. I'll go through a second renegotiation with the seller. Okay, so the first they put it under contract, that's the first offer. Then I'll go back and I'll do, if I like the property, I'll go through a second negotiation process. And then we'll move forward. If that goes well, the second negotiation, we'll move forward to closing. Okay. Now, you see that process is a little different than a bird dog. It's a little bit more, intense or a little bit more work. Let's say more tasks for the person finding the deal. Does that make sense so far?
So, what's your criteria? Like, how do you have to train them? Like, what you're looking for, and then when they put the property in contract. Are they putting down the property under your company name or with their name and assigned to you?
Sure. That's a great question. I get this asked all the time. Yes, I do have to give them the criteria. They need to know what I'm looking for. Now, in North and South Carolina for the past 5 years, because when I first got to North and South Carolina, I was doing virtual wholesaling. Then I switched to owner financing. So for the past 5 years, I've been doing owner financing, in North and South Carolina. So I give them the search criteria that I'm looking for. And that is typically properties under 100,000. Okay. I'll give you an example. Let me give you a quick example. One of my deal hunters was looking on Craigslist, found a property. The man had it listed for $65,000 on Craigslist. Okay, that was what he put on Craigslist. However, the property in the pictures was super clean, right? There was like two or three pictures. Property looked clean. So anyway, she calls the owner and says, hey, I'm in the area, which was Fayetteville, North Carolina. Says, hey, I'm in the area. I'd like to go swing by and look at the property. And he said, sure, no problem. I live in the area. I'll come take a look. I'll meet you over there. So she gets over there, and she goes and takes a walkthrough with the property. Okay, she does the walkthrough, starts taking pictures, starts taking video. While she's there with the owner, she calls me, and she says, you're not going to believe how clean this property is. It's probably one of the cleanest properties I've ever seen. And she's gone through a lot of properties. So I said, okay, great. Send me over the pictures. Send me the video. Let's take a look at it and put it under contract while you're there. So now remember, he had it listed for $65,000. She puts it under contract while she's there for $45,000. That was her offer there with him. And he says yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, that's nothing yet. That's just list price to the first offer. Here's where it gets better. He says yes. And he says, listen, there's always a story. Remember that. In this business, when you're investing with motivated sellers, you have to listen for the story. Your goal is to find the problem, right? So this gentleman's problem, he bought this house for his daughter and his son-in-law. Within 1 year, they were both divorced, and then he tried to rent the property for 6 months, and it was just a nightmare for him for 3 months. I don't want to say rehabs the property, but he basically fixed up the property. He bought a new refrigerator. He bought a new dishwasher and did the property up. And all he told my deal hunter, he said, listen, this property has been a headache for me. I just need to get rid of it. If I could just pay off the bank, if you could just help me pay off the bank, I just don't want to owe anything anymore on this property. I want it out of my life. So my deal hunter, you know, he just gave away the winning number. Well, kind of in a way. He gave up the winning answer, just pay off the bank. So this guy is willing to say, hey, if you can get it off my hands for nothing, you know, and I don't make anything, then just take it off my hands. Okay, well, let's see if the numbers work. So she calls me up, and she gets it under contract for 45, and I said, well, hey, did you talk about closing costs? And she said, no. I said, okay, so this is what we're going to do. You're going to call him back, and you're going to say, we will cover closing costs. Okay, remember that for your marketing. That's always a powerful, for motivated sellers, that's always a powerful thing where you cover closing costs. So you say, listen, we'll cover closing costs, and we will try to close by Friday. Now, I believe this was a Monday or Tuesday, so closing by Friday would really, like, whet this guy's appetite. Like, yes, let's do it. Let's do it fast. So she called him back. She renegotiated the property down to – she said, well, listen, you know, we will cover closing costs. We'll do everything. And if we can close by Friday, we will buy it from you for $40,000. So you see, she went from $45,000. She brought it down an extra $5,000. And guess what you think he said?
Yes.
He said,
great job.
Yeah. He said, yes. Now, mind you, I didn't go to this property. I didn't take pictures. I didn't go out there. I didn't talk to the seller. Because I put a team in place. Like, not a whole team. I found someone that would want to do the front end. Now, this person doesn't want to do the back end. Doesn't want to raise the money or pay for it herself or go get a loan or whatever. My deal hunter just is task-oriented and wants to do the front end. Because I know I get this question a lot. Like, well, why didn't your deal hunter just get this deal for themselves? Not everybody wants to be a real estate investor. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what happens after that process, in this example, is after the property is under contract, since we got it to 40, I'm thinking now, okay, well, the balance of the mortgage can't be that far away from 40,000. So 3 days before closing, I get the HUD statement, and I look at it, and the HUD statement was like 38,000 $900 or something like that. It was really close to $39,000. So I knew this guy was probably going to walk away with like $1,000. So that's fine. Great. But here's the best part. The best part is the property, and this is what I did during my due diligence period, right? When I saw the pictures of the property, I pulled the values. The property across the street had sold in January, this January of 2017. It sold for $112,000. Okay?
No.
Yeah. Now, that property was a little bit better. It had a detached garage. Okay? So I had to take off my price, my value. I had to take off at least 10 grand. And then my property was just a few hundred square feet smaller. I think it was like 150 square feet smaller. No big deal. I could have put that property on the market retailed with a realtor if I wanted to. I don't need a realtor. I don't use realtors. But I could have, if I wanted to go to that traditional model, I could have sold it probably for maybe 95 to 100,000. But all I did was I quick turned and sold it to another investor. That's all I did, who wanted to put a renter in it for at least $1,200 a month, because that's what the area was pulling. So I quick turned and sold that bad boy for $85,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So here's the difference. I got the property for 40, right? That was the purchase price. Closing cost is about $1,000. I pay my deal hunter more than average, okay? This is not like $500 referral fee, okay? This is not a $500 bird dog or $1,000 bird dog fee. My deal hunter got paid anywhere between $3,000 to $6,000 for doing the entire process. Now, most people think that, wow, that's crazy. You're paying your deal hunter so much money. But the reality is I didn't do any of the work on the front end. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's crazy, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the thing. Some people pay, they'll pay for direct mail marketing. That's going to cost money, right? It's going to cost you maybe hundreds of dollars. It's going to cost you time. So I have to look at my lifestyle. When you ask me that question, how do you do it? What's your process? That's my process. It may not work for everyone. And I don't do like 50 deals or 100 deals a year like Larry does, or over 100 deals like Larry does. I don't do that, man. That's not my lifestyle. I personally like to do anywhere between 10 to 15 deals a year. That's about it. I don't need to do more than that, because then I'm like stressing myself out. I got a lot of stuff going on, you know. And, I'll never forget, it was just Easter, this past Easter. I closed 3 deals in April. And one of them, I was in Uganda, Africa. My wife's Ugandan. And I'm not kidding you. During Easter, I had to close a deal on the day after Easter. And I'm 2 hours away from a major city. I'm in a remote village. I'm at a small internet cafe paying like 30 cents an hour for internet. And I'm over there scanning signed documents, right? And see, I don't really like that stress. So, and the thing couldn't wait. So I kind of, we closed 3 deals in April. I was like, man, 3 deals. I don't need 3 deals a month right now. I don't. But some people do, and that's okay. Here's what's important. Do what you need to do in your business to get there, right, to get to that level. I share this with you not to tell you I'm doing all these deals, but just to share with you that I build a lifestyle business where I can do what I want when I want, and I don't have to be, like, always tied to my business. But here's something that's very important. Don't wholesale all the time, okay? Wholesaling's okay. Like, I think you're wholesaling real estate right now, right? Is that what you told me earlier?
Yeah.
It's okay to do it in the beginning, like wholesaling, and that's how I got started too. You wholesale for chunks of cash. But don't wholesale all the time. The reason is when you keep wholesaling, you're basically just using you're getting a chunk of, it's like you're earning a paycheck, it's like a job. So you're going out, you're doing all the work, and then you lose the property. Someone else is taking over the property, and they could be renting it out, they could be lease optioning it, whatever it is. So it's okay to set a goal or set a how many years. My goal when I was doing wholesaling full time in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, my goal was $500,000. And you got to understand, in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, the properties are much more expensive. So, I was getting checks of like $20,000 to $30,000closing fees, assignment fees. But the thing is, know what your goal is, and then stop. You want to stop wholesaling. in a way. You don't have to stop it completely, but in order to build wealth, you have to get in a holding position. So you're going to want to buy and hold for passive income. You could do owner financing. Is a great. I hold a lot of properties. I got a lot of notes. And you want to get to that point where that passive income comes in and set a goal for yourself, because years ago, I used to work for a gentleman who owns a lot of apartments. He owns over 8,000 apartments. And he taught me something that was very, very powerful. He basically just said, set a goal for how much you want so that you can be completely free from a job. And at that time, it was $5,000 a month. So I worked really hard at building up my apartment to get to that level. And then I said, okay, I don't really need to work, quotes anymore. I don't need to work anymore, but I just need to continue acquiring the real estate to build that passive income. So just keep that in mind. Wholesaling is good for a period of time, but set a goal or a certain amount of income that you want to generate from wholesaling so that you can not have to do it so much, and then you can move into a holding position. Does that make sense?
Yes. I have a question for your acquisition manager. Typically,
sure.
What percentage that you're sharing with your acquisition manager when they're doing pretty much all the front-end deal?
Sure, yeah. And that will vary, because if they help me sell the deal, that will vary on a deal basis. But on the front end, I pay them anywhere between 5% to 7% of the purchase price. 5%
to
7%.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then
if they help me sell the deal, most of the time I'll just do a flat fee. It'll be like a flat fee bonus. So that could range anywhere between $1,000 to as high as $3,000.
Okay, I see. And what's your strategy for doing the seller financing? Do you do the wraparound mortgage? Do you sell? I mean, what do you get the money to do at the seller financing, actually?
It's a great question. So with owner financing, I've done deals with my own money. I've done deals with other people's money. If you're doing it with other people's money, you're going to need a wraparound mortgage. But here's the thing. You're going to want to talk to an attorney in your state, okay? You're going to want to know what you can or can't do in your state, because some attorneys are going to say, hey, let's do it this way or that way, okay? You just want to talk to a real estate attorney in your state. You should have one on your power team, okay? When I say power team, I'm meaning, there's a group of people, an agent, an appraiser, all these kind of people who touch and do real estate. A real estate attorney should be on your power team in your business, someone you can pick up the phone and call and talk to, okay? So if you're using private money, you're going to have to do a wraparound mortgage. If you're using it personally, then you could just have a loan servicing company set it up that way. So I've also done lease options. Here's the difference here, okay? Some states it's more advantageous to do a lease option than it is owner financing, okay? They're very similar. Like, the process is kind of similar. There's still like a security deposit in the lease option, or they call it option consideration money, option money, which can be almost like a down payment, right? So there's a little slightly different there. It's all in the paperwork, right? One owns the property, the other one doesn't. In owner financing, you can do what's called a deed in lieu. So here's what's super important, because it's going to be hard for me to give you an answer based on your state. Here's what you need to do. Get with your real estate attorney and find out which is going to be best in your state. And then you can probably weigh the options between owner financing and lease options, which are very similar. So does that answer your question? Or you were also asking about, was it private money as well? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you raise private money, or you?
I do. I've been raising private money now for 10 years? Is it 10 years? How old am I? Yeah, 10 years. Here's the strategy. I learned this from my mentor and friend who's raised over, $500 million, up probably now these days. When I first met him, he had raised over $300 million. Here's what you do. Private money is a very personal thing. You can't advertise for private money. You can't put a rate out there to the public on a private offering, private securities. So what you have to do is you have to build trust and relationship, okay? So here's what I do. Every day I call two people. And by the way, what I'm sharing with you, I didn't come up with myself. I learned it from my mentor back in the day who raised millions of dollars. You call two people every day, and they don't have to be in real estate. Some people are in real estate. Some people are not. Okay, you call two people every day, and you talk to them about, you ask them how they're doing, okay? How's life? How's your family? How's your kids? How's your business? How's your job? Whatever it is, right? You just call to build a relationship. These calls should be anywhere between 30 minutes. They can go an hour. They can. But about 30 minutes is a good enough time, or at least 30 minutes for them. So give yourself some time to have a good conversation. Okay, so you ask them how's family, how's life. Okay, so when you're talking up to them, naturally what they're going to do is they're going to ask you how's life and how's business or how's your life going, right? Well, when they do that, that's when you talk about your opportunity. You don't need to talk about whatever else is going on in your life. Whatever else is happening doesn't matter in a way, okay? I know it does. Of course it is. Of course your life matters. But the whole idea of this is, if you want to start off, oh, you know, I just took my dog to the vet today. Oh, but what really is going on, what really got me excited, right, is your opportunity. And when I say opportunity, means the part where you're talking about raising money, okay? And you wanted to follow this pattern. It goes like this. When you bring up the opportunity, you never ask someone, this is a rule, you never ask someone directly if they're interested in investing. Never ask, it's like a rule in raising private money. Don't ask someone directly. Don't say, are you interested in investing in this opportunity? Oh, I have this property. Are you interested? Don't do that. This is what you do. You say, I have this property or I have an opportunity, right? Even if you have a property or if you don't have a property, you can do this method. So you say, I have this opportunity where I help investors or I help people like yourself who can earn anywhere between 8% and 12% on their money. Okay, and I'm giving you an average. You can say whatever numbers you want for your business, but I'm just telling you what I say. So I say, okay, you know, anywhere between 8 to 12% on your money. Would you happen to know anyone that would be interested in investing in this type of opportunity? Okay, so the key line there is, would you happen to know anyone that would be interested in investing in this type of opportunity? The reason why you do that is this is psychology, is when you're, this is called, my mentor told me this, is he said, ask the person behind them. Never ask them directly, ask the person behind them. That's when you're asking it like this, do you happen to know anyone? That's asking someone behind them, someone that they can think of. The reason why you do that is because human nature, it's called fear of loss, okay? So human nature, people don't want to be left out. So what happens is when you're saying, do you know anyone? Immediately in their mind and in their body, they're thinking, what about me, right? Now, even if they don't have the money, doesn't matter. They could have money. They could not have money. They could borrow money. It doesn't matter. You don't care at that point. You're just trying to spring up human emotion. So they're going to say, well, I'm interested. I want to make anywhere between 8 to 12% of my money because my stock market, it just went down the tubes, right? Whatever they're going to bring up. Or they're going to say, I got money sitting in a checking account, in a CD, whatever they say, okay, or in an IRA. It doesn't matter where their money is. But when they say, here's another magical way to put this together, ready? When they say, well, what about me? I'm interested, right? That's when you respond, oh, really? Like, oh, you're interested? And they're like, yeah, I'm interested. You always want to respond that way. Like, oh, like you're surprised, right? Like, oh, you're interested? Oh, okay. But do you know anyone else? You still want to ask for someone else, okay? This is very important because this brings you referrals. This brings the next two people that you're going to be talking to. So you say, oh, okay, you're interested? Well, what part of that, of what I just said, are you interested in, right? What part of the opportunity, the real estate, is it the money? Is it the percentage rate? Is it being, you know, investing in real estate? what part was it that sounded interesting to you? Okay? Now, a very important question when you're raising private money is asking how much money they have to invest. You have to ask the question. So you say, well, how much are you thinking, how much capital would you like to use? How much are you thinking about investing? How much capital do you have to invest? And then they're going to tell you a number, okay? They're going to say whatever it could be. They could say, well, I don't have any money right now. It's coming to me, or I have $5,000, I have $50,000, I have $5 million. Here's the important part about this, your response to this answer that they give you. Now, if they tell you they don't have any money, this response won't work. But let's just pretend right now they say $100,000, okay? So they say, well, I have $100,000. When they tell you that number, whatever number it is, you say, that's great, but we're not going to need all that. Okay, so if they tell you $300,000, you say, oh, that's great, but we're not going to need all that. And the reason why you say that line just like that, just use that word, that's great, but we're not going to need all that, even if they push you and they'll say, no, listen, you can use this money. It's just sitting there. Please use the whole $300,000. You say, no, that's great, but we're not going to need all that. And the reason why you do that is because you never want to take all of the money from someone. You never want to take everyone, like every dollar they have. You never want to leave someone with $100 in their checking account, okay? It just makes people feel very uneasy. It leaves a bad emotional state in someone's mind, okay? So what you do is if the deal and hypothetically was, whatever, $80,000, then you only use the 80, okay? You don't need to take someone and leave them only with $100 in their checking account. This also builds the trust factor between you and the lender, because now they're thinking, oh, she's so smart, or he's so smart, right? Like they must know what they're doing. They're not trying to take all my money. You know, they know their numbers, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So,
yes.
And you do this on a regular basis. I don't care if you call one person a day or two people a day. Don't overdo it. But as long as you're consistent, don't call 10 people in one day. Don't do that and do it once a week. No, be consistent. If it's one person a day, then it's one person a day. If it's two people a day, it's two. I like to use two people a day. And then here's the thing. When you're still looking for referrals, so when you still want to find out, like, hey, do you happen to know anyone? They're going to tell you, well, yeah, maybe my doctor or my cousin, my uncle, whoever it is. You say, oh, okay, well, let me get their name and their number, and I will talk about it with them as well and say that, hey, you thought of them, they may be interested. And if they end up investing, I'll send you a referral fee. Some people will tell you, oh, no, they're my cousin, I don't need the referral fee. You say, okay, that's fine, but I usually have a referral program. And your whole goal is to get more referrals that way, and then you call up those referrals, and you do the same thing. Hey, I got your name from, you know, your cousin, and they asked me to call you. How's your day going? Talk about them a little bit. And the reason for my call is to tell you about this opportunity. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's private. I'm giving you a strategy that, again, that's what my friend and mentor has done for many years. He's raised millions of dollars that way, because in private money, you have to do it that in a way. That's a very one-on-one approach. The other way to do it, which is not very common for most investors, what they do is they do like little conferences. Okay. They'll get like a group of five people together or 10 people together. Most people don't feel very comfortable getting in front of a group of people and talking about these kinds of things. So most investors start off doing it one-on-one. That's why I'm sharing it with you that way. And it's a very simple way. It's a great way to raise private money, because you cannot post online or run an ad and says, hey, do you want to make 10% guaranteed return on real estate? You can't do that, because it goes against some guidelines and some laws that you don't want to be in trouble with the government. Does that make sense?
So where did you find the list? It's people you know. I mean, two a day, that's a lot of people in a year.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, you just start with who you know. You got to understand, private money is, because it's a private offering, it's a private security, it means it has to be in your network. If you want to look up more of these guidelines, you can look on the SEC website, the government website. But a private offering has to be people that you already currently existingly know. And or within that network, you might have to meet them recently, right? That's considered a private offering. So you have to start in your list. That means you literally have to like, okay, listen, you know what I did years ago? I thought of the most wealthiest people in the city that I lived in, Massachusetts. And it was a small, rundown city, not very wealthy, very low-end city. I just thought of the richest people in that city, and I went to go talk to them. That's how I raised money in the beginning when I was doing wholesaling. I would say, hey, you want to buy property? You know, that's what you got to do. You got to start talking to people and just start getting out there and asking them, hey, if they're interested, great. If they're not, then they may know someone who is.
I mean, can you do something like do that on your own, like Facebook? I mean, it's your friend.
No.
Okay.
Do not use Facebook. You don't raise money. Listen, no one is going to wire you $100,000, $50,000 by talking to them through a social media or an email or
okay.
a text. Unless they're your cousin or your mother or your uncle. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to do that. You have to get on the phone with people. Okay, let me ask you a question. If we just met and we met online, like you and me, and we connected, we added each other as friends on Facebook, and we're chatting back and forth for 3 hours, and I ask you for $100,000, would you wire me that money?
No.
Oh, what would you want to do? Let's pretend you're interested, though. You're interested, and you don't want to wire me $100,000 because we've been chatting for 3 hours on Facebook, but you're interested. What would you want to do?
Probably want to find out more about it.
You want to find out more about it? Okay, so what do we do next? We're chatting on Facebook. You're interested. Sounds really good. What do you want to do now?
Coffee.
Probably call you up and ask more questions.
You got it. You want to talk to me. Maybe I'm local. Maybe you want to meet up with me. Let's not get too complicated with this. Social media is going to complicate your business. It's going to complicate your life. It probably sucks most of your life anyway right now if you're on it. Really, it does. I'm going to be very direct and very upfront with anyone I talk to. Social media is the biggest time waster in human life, in human history. Okay, here's the thing. You're not going to raise money out of social media. Okay, you're going to get on the phone because no one's going to wire you $100,000 over social media. No one's going to wire you $100,000 in an email unless you want to work with a Nigerian scam. And I don't mean to pull out a country here, by the way. The only reason why I'm doing that is because it's been known that people wired money to different countries, including the biggest scam of them all, came out of Nigeria. Is different wired money in different countries just via email. Okay, so scam artists do that. And they're all over the world. Scam artists just talk. They don't want to get on the phone with you, right? Scam artists don't want to talk to you. Why? Because they're not real. You're not a scam artist, right? So get off the email. Get off the text messaging. Get on the phone. People need to talk to people. There's no way someone is going to email or wire you money that way in private money. There's no way. Even if you're working with a cash buyer, do you know this? Let's do wholesaling for a second. You have a deal, you post it online, you start marketing it, right? Do you know the cash buyer is not going to close a deal with you without talking to you on the phone? I'd be shocked if a cash buyer. And I get this all the time. They say, well, couldn't I do a deal completely virtually without talking to a cash buyer? Probably not the first one. You could do it on the second or third one maybe if you have a good relationship. But guess what? Even a cash buyer, when you're doing wholesaling, they're going to want to talk to you. They're going to want to talk to you at the end of the day. Yeah. So listen, cut
I think my
it
was,
all out. What's that?
I think my cash file was I was just texting.
Yeah, have you guys closed the deal yet?
Oh yeah, I double closed it.
Okay, did you ever get on the phone at all?
I don't know. Maybe I don't
person?
Remember. Mostly just email.
You never got on the phone. You never met in person. Never got on the phone because you would be the first person.
My virtual wholesaling. Virtual wholesale in Alabama.
Yeah. So let me ask you this: did you ever meet in person or ever get on the phone? Because you would be the first person I've ever heard that from.
Never met a person.
Have you ever talked on the phone?
I don't remember. I think most just text and email because everything was done through escrow, and he just bring the check to escrow, so it's not like, you know, I'm going to run out with his money.
No, yeah, that's great. That's a way of protection, absolutely. Well, that's great. You would probably be the first investor I've ever heard that done, and escrow is a very safe way to do that, of course. But congratulations, because you're probably the first investor out of that cash buyer.
Yeah, it was a cash buyer.
Like, hey.
I asked him to show me a copy of the bank statement, and I told him to bring a non-refundable deposit to the escrow himself.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Hey, that's great. That is great. I'm serious because if you can't recall that you had a phone conversation at one point, it's so rare that someone's actually going to do that. So maybe, hey, if you did it, congratulations.
I never saw the property.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
Mhm. I have other people do the work for me.
That's great.
Yeah, I even have the property inspector going there by himself. Just send me the pictures.
Well, absolutely. That's you're talking normal processes for wholesaling. That's fantastic. That's really what virtual wholesaling is all about. My point is about raising private money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting the cash buyer that you never close deals with. There has to be a human element to that, and people are going to want to know that they're talking to someone when they're dealing with their money. When you're raising private money, also, you have to understand there's a little bit difference when it comes to an investor who's buying, like a cash buyer. A cash buyer is more of an investor. They know the process.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Private money doesn't always come from an investor. Sometimes it comes from a cousin or a connection, or it may come from a chiropractor. And they've never done real estate before.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's never done real estate before is not going to do what that cash buyer did with you.
Exactly.
So just keep that in mind. That's where that whole private money conversation is coming. So if you're talking to a savvy investor and he's closed a bunch of deals and he's a cash buyer, he might not need to have a phone.
Well, because when I advertise for handyman, so he flipped property before.
Yeah, that's right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when you deal with the private money lenders, what is your general deals that you offer them? You mentioned 10% guaranteed return on investment. Is that per year? Is that per 6 months of the deal life? Or what?
You know, every deal is different. Here's the thing. You want to give them a better rate than they're getting, okay? And don't state the rate first. Don't say, hey, you know, do you want to make 8% or do you want to make 12%? Here's the question to ask is how much are you currently making on the money that you have? So if they have $100,000 in an IRA and it's making them 4%, you could easily double that number. You could say, oh,
you're
making
4%. You're talking about the annual return?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Simple. It's a simple interest loan.
Okay.
Yeah. With that is you just – it's a case-by-case basis, but, I mean, you really want to find out what their rate is first, because if they're making 8%, you don't want to say, oh, I'll double what you're making in the beginning of the conversation. So what you want to do is find out what they're making on their money already. And typically, if it's in an IRA or some type of stock, any stock-driven fund, it's probably anywhere between 4% and 50%. So if you feel comfortable with doubling that, or if you want to, you know, just it's got to be – It's got to be in their favor. They got to get excited about the rate. And private money is great at a one-year minimum term. Don't do 6 months. 6 months is hard money, and that's a whole other – that's the rehabbing world.
Mm-hmm.
But private money, at least a one-year term. Private money, these people normally are going to let the money sit out for over a year. Okay, it's money that they don't need, you know, in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. What's your formula for maximum offer? Like, if the house is worth, let's say, $100,000, and maybe $20,000 rehab cost, usually what is your max offer?
Yeah, so that's going to depend. Well, it's going to depend on a few things, but here's something I will direct you to because it's 70% rule, right? Here's the thing. Anywhere between 30 to 50% below market value, right, is where you want to be at. But the 70% rule is kind of like industry standard for wholesaling real estate, okay? That gives you enough room to get the property, and you got to – here's the important factors. You got to build in your closing costs. You have to build in your any fees, closing costs, insurance. You have to build in those costs right there. And most importantly, you have to build in your fee. My coach and mentor 12 years ago told me this. Work the deal backwards. And he told me, how much do you want to make? That's what he told me. How much do you want to make per deal? And then he said, work your deal that way. And at the time, it was, you know, $5,000 when I first got started, and it started escalating from $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000. But I always work the deal backwards. So first decide on how much you want to make or you can make in a market on a deal, on a wholesale flip. And that may be, what was your last deal? You said you just closed the deal. So what was your last profit on that deal?
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
About $15,000.
Okay. So is that the average in that area or is that?
I think it's higher than most people make in that area.
Sure. Yeah. So if your average, let's just say hypothetically it's $10,000, right? The above normal is $15,000. Let's say average is 10. So you want to build your numbers with 10 grand already in profit in the deal, okay? And then include your closing costs, include any insurance, any taxes. You want to just make sure all those numbers are built in before you go to your max allowed offer. All right?
Yeah, can
now,
you tell
if you have, if you have one of Larry's – if you have Larry's wholesaling course, you can use his – calculator. That is a great tool. I've been using that since I discovered it. It's a simple calculator that helps you plug in all the numbers, including your profit, and gives you the max allowable offer.
Yeah, actually, I just got it from the HUD, and this property I'm thinking about doing seller finance. I'm thinking I'll maybe have a season for maybe 6 months, and I want to sell the note. What is a good source to sell a note?
Ooh, okay. So I've only sold one of my notes, and I sold it to a private party. But I do, since I have your email, I can email you. There's a list that Larry has put together, and I actually use it for a lot of my students that I coach with, and I've used some of it myself. But this list of some of them are institutions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are institutions, is you can call them and sell your notes to them. There's a lot of note buyers out there.
I was checking online. There are a lot of institutional note buyer, but usually they really, really discount your note, and basically you're not making really much profit afterwards.
Well, yeah, institutional buyers, they're going to want anywhere between a 20 to as high as 30% yield on the money.
Wow.
The best thing you can do, in my opinion, is just sell it to a private party. Again,
mm-hmm.
This goes back to raising private money. It's the same thing, just a different way to pitch the opportunity. But the best thing to do is sell it to a private party because the reality is if someone is making 4% on their IRA, let's say, you can say, hey, do you want to get a note that's going to yield you X percent, you know? So that's the private party is the best way to go. It's super flexible, Right. You don't have to worry about dealing with all the corporate institutional stuff. You can pick the rate. You can kind of work the rate out. They're not, if you work with a private party, they may not be in the business. If you work with someone who's not in real estate investing, if you work with another non-institutional buyer, but maybe they are a note buyer, maybe someone at a local REIA group and they buy notes. And they're a little bit more flexible than institutional buyers, right? So maybe they don't want 30% yield, right? Maybe they're okay with 10 or 15 or, you know. So you could, local investment clubs. There's usually one note buyer, I guess. There's not a lot of note buyers out there in investment groups, but they're out there. What state are you living in, by the way? Or what state do you invest in?
I'm investing in Alabama.
Okay. No buyers will buy notes anywhere. The place I found the most note buyers, private note buyers, is Texas. So if you literally just kind of Google Dallas, Texas, Dallas, Texas note buyer, you'll get a bunch of guys who are just trying to buy notes. Do it in Dallas, Houston. That's the place I found the most. That's my research. You can probably do that in other states.
The list that you have, are you selling directly to the private lender, private note buyer?
What? Say that again? The what?
I mean, the list, you say you have a list of note buyers?
So there's a list that Larry has that I can email to you.
Oh, awesome.
He has a list of institutional note buyers that you can contact. The biggest note buyer in the United States is National. Maybe you've gotten even a letter from them before, but they're called National, and they're the biggest note buyer in the country right now.
Yeah. Actually, last time I was surfing the Craigslist, and I see somebody advertising, either selling notes or advertise as a note buyer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could do that. I mean, you could definitely check Craigslist. Here's what I'd recommend you do, because it could be tiresome to do this. Hire a virtual assistant, and what you have them do is tell them to scrape the entire United States for note buyers, but privately, no institutional, no companies, no institutional note buyers. They got to be private. Maybe have a private, but like a non-toll-free number and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just have your virtual assistant pull all the names and the phone numbers.
Yeah, but I don't know if my virtual assistant knows how to do that.
Get a new virtual assistant. Don't expect your virtual assistant to be master of everything. Just find a new virtual assistant that can do that project for you. That is familiar with doing it. You can kind of ask a bunch of virtual assistants, have you ever done this before? Do you know how to do it? This is what I need to do. Like, write it all out. This is what I need done. Can you do this? Have you done it before? Do you have experience? That kind of stuff. Yeah. Because all that is web scraping. All that is web scraping. That's all it is.
So typically, how much do you pay for a virtual assistant to do this kind of work?
The web scraping kind of stuff, you can probably get someone to do that for anywhere between, it's negotiable, but anywhere between $3 an hour to maybe $6 an hour.
Okay. From Upwork, right?
Upwork.com, yeah.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
And do you interview virtual assistants by phone or Skype when you hire them, or how do you find the right ones?
This is a great question. I have I used to be a headhunter for some companies, so I'll tell you exactly my strategy. It may not be yours, but I'll tell you what I do. This is what I do. I go on Upwork.com, and I narrow down my search by virtual assistants that are active, meaning they've made money and they've been on Upwork for the past, like within the month. They have to be, they have to have made over, I think it's like, what is it, $10,000 or something like that. All my virtual assistants that I look for have to make over like $10,000 on Upwork. They have to have at least 95% and above success rate. And then what I do is I scan profiles, and this is what I do. I literally look at dollar amounts. I look at how much has this been, person been paid in specifically the field that I'm looking for, the specific job. I look at what have they been paid, and I see if they're actually working for someone right now. Okay? I see if they're looking for someone right now in the same business. Okay? In the same business. So if I need someone to do, let's just say, web scraping, and they're doing it for other investors right now, like that's what they do full-time, or most of their work comes, like it'll say in progress, and it'll say the description that they're working with someone else. So if they're doing pretty much the same thing for someone else, I'll contact them, and I'll say, hey, can you start working for me for, like, whatever, 5 hours a week or 3 hours a week? If they do good work, and I know that they probably are because they probably made, like, thousands of dollars with another investor, what I'll do is I'll slowly persuade them to come over, and it's all money-driven. It's the same thing as headhunting. See, I used to do a lot of headhunting back in the day, and the way you get someone really good from one company to another is money or great benefits. So that's my tactic. I can't tell you, I don't know if it'll work for you, but literally it's just headhunting 101. It's persuade someone who's doing a great job for someone else and get them to come over to your company.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there's other ways, of course. I mean, but honestly, the best and fastest way, like, to get someone really good is just find someone who's doing a great job for someone else. And you can easily see that right on Upwork.com. You can see how much they paid and how long they've been working for that person. So if someone has paid a virtual assistant like $50,000, they're probably doing a damn good job, right? Does that make sense? And they've been working with them for like 2 years or 3 years. That investor probably doesn't want to let them go. But if you can get, like, start off with 3 hours a week of their time or 5 hours a week of their time, you can just slowly start to persuade them to come over. Some will, maybe you don't need them for, like, full time. Maybe you just use them part time. But at least you know they're good because they're doing it for someone else already.
Have you ever used a virtual assistant to submit offers for you?
No.
Okay.
Larry does. Larry does with HUD.
Oh, yeah.
I don't do that for motivated sellers. No, I don't do that.
So basically your business model is based on dog, right?
Is my deal hunters. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's my primary business model.
Deal hunter, do you advertise on Craigslist? How do you find those acquisitions?
No, I like to get people who are motivated in real estate. My favorite places in investment clubs are REIT groups, the people who haven't done a deal yet, but they have all this knowledge and education. Those are my favorite kinds of people to work with because they're motivated, they like real estate, they may not be they're not doing it full time. They may have just came out of some seminars, like maybe they just came out of Rich Dad, Poor Dad seminars or whatever. They're just super excited. They want to do real estate, but they have no idea how to do the whole process. So I know what those people, I ask them specific questions, and I just find out where they're at, and then I say, well, you can work for me, and I'll kind of show you the whole process.
So do you show from beginning to the end, like more
because if someone is really going to do the business, they wouldn't even say yes to me. Does that make sense? Let me be very clear. A bird dog is never going to be a full time investor. You get what I'm saying? Like a bird dog, more than likely, if they're a bird dog, it's very more likely they'll always be in that position. Of course, there's a percentage that won't. I get it. But the majority, if a person is a bird dog, they're probably just going to be a bird dog. However, if you have someone who is seriously going to be an investor, it's going to be right there in front of you. You'll hear it in their attitude. You'll hear it in the way they respond to questions.
Okay. Oh, and also one last question about, I remember you said something about your acquisition manager make the offer first, But it is make an offer under your real estate company name, and then you just make go
yeah.
over, make sure it's the term that you wanted, right? Double check all the numbers.
Yeah.
Make sure it makes sense.
Yeah, they got to do it with my search criteria, and yeah, they do it under my name.
They're not
using it, their own name. Yeah, they're not putting it under their own name and then marketing it or anything like that. No, they just put it under my company.
But let me ask you, so when it's in contract, that means you already signed, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so basically they have the seller sign and then have you sign, but you just review, make sure all the terms
are
okay. Got it.
Right, because you have your due diligence period.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. All right, well, I'm going to leave it open here just for 2 more minutes if someone else wants to ask one last question. I know we're over an hour here. But does anyone want to get in any other questions right now?
Can you clarify that last point? You said the virtual assistant finds your name or brings the contract with the seller's signature to you to sign?
That can go both ways, but they use my LLC. They use my company name. I don't want to say LLC because that's going to vary from person to person. But they use my company name on the contract. Now, they can have the seller sign first. That's okay. And then I can sign off on it. But my signature has to be at closing. They can sign on my behalf. I have done things where power of attorney, one of my deal hunters, because I have a few deal hunters that I work with, but one of my deal hunters has a power of attorney on quite a bit of my stuff. So they can actually sign off on quite a few documents and make some decisions, executive decisions on my behalf.
Wow.
So you don't have to do that. I'm not saying that's the road to go. You have to build trust. I've been working with one of my deal hunters for about 6 years.
Wow.
So you have to know who you're working with, but yeah, one of my deal hunters has power of attorney, a good extent of power of attorney in two states. But you take that on a case-by-case basis. But have them do it in your company name if you go that route. Have them do it in your company name. And they can have the seller sign it first. So that's not a problem.
And how long is your general due diligence from?
15 days is fine. I mean, it can be flexible. But 15 days is like pretty much the average. If you're in a situation, if the seller is like, well, does it have to be so long or what's going on? Okay, my deal hunter may come back with 10 days. If you know you can get what you need done in a short amount of time, then go for it. Here's one thing that I like to say, or my deal hunters say, okay? 15-day standard due diligence period, but hey, we want to close the deal by next week, right? We want to close the deal fast. We do this. This is standard policy. This is a standard company policy. We got to have a 15-day due diligence period. But listen, our goal is to get this thing closed quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have one question for your acquisition manager. Like currently, how many you have, and are they divided by the territory, like zip code, their neighborhood?
They're not divided by territory. They're mostly one of them is full time, and the rest are all kind of part time. So,
oh, okay.
One of them has a business, and a few of them have jobs. But one of them is full time, and they don't have territories, so.
So you have about what, 3 or 4 bird dogs right now? You are.
It was 5, but one person emailed me recently and said they're going to do something else in life. So.
Okay.
So it's on and off. And if it's part time, it's not like they're doing 30 hours a week. Part time is like, I don't even know. I mean, it's,
So that's just maybe
full
deal a year for you. Right.
For me, I'll tell you what, I'm not doing 100 deals a year. On average, like I said earlier, is I'm doing anywhere between 10 to 15 deals. This year, I know I'm probably going to end up doing like around 15 because we closed a few. We closed like 2 and 3 a few times this year already in 1 month. So
wow.
I think we're probably going to be around 15. But I already know I don't want to get to that point. When I mentioned earlier, when I was doing wholesaling full time, I was closing like 5 deals a month. And that's just, I don't know, it's just a headache. It's started losing a lot of hair, started getting really like the stress level was going insane. I was in the hospital. I used to be on the pill, Nexium. I was in the hospital throwing up blood. You know, it was all kind of stress problems. My body can't handle it, like just me personally. So I don't need that in my life. I just, you know, I built up my passive income, and I'd like to kind of do a few deals every now and then. But I always tell people, I say, listen, you know, and that didn't happen overnight. Please understand that. That is not like, oh, you can do this in 30 days. No, that took me years to do that. What you need to just keep in mind is set some goals, what you want to do, how much passive income do you want, what you need to do to get there. And that's what it did. It took me a few years to get there, but yeah, I got there. And then, you know, just like I said earlier, just kind of don't always wholesale every deal. You can work with either private money or banks, whatever you need to do. Just don't keep wholesaling. You got to at some point hold real estate.
Yes. Great. Thanks.
Sure. No problem. All right. Okay, everyone. So I hope everyone got some value out of this, but I do want to give you my email just in case you didn't want to, or you couldn't get a question in, or you didn't have the opportunity, your phone or whatever. Give you my email so you can shoot me a question that way. Or if something was said you want more clarity on, or you want one of the things that I mentioned on the call, something like that. Here's the email. It's Nathan, which is Nathan, and then it's @LarryGoins.com. So it's Nathan, Nathan, @LarryGoins.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, Nathan, can I ask you one quick question? It won't even take but 2 minutes. Okay. Okay, this is just about when you're doing your direct mail. Would it be better to just go ahead and just send your postcards out in the mail yourself, or just have a mail service do it? You know, because of the cost, it might be cost prohibitive if you've got a lot of mail pieces.
Yeah, you know, this is a great question. I actually have some students who actually do postcards by hand. I know that's going to sound absolutely insane, but they do them by hand, and they get good results. They really get good results. However, it's not very replicatable. You can't do that. You can't do that by the hundreds. Here's the thing. If you're going to do mass mailing, what I recommend is using a company called Click2 and then Mail. It's called Click2Mail. Even if you did a Google search for Click2Mail, that's a great company to use. They'll do mass mailings for you. They can pull lists. However, if you need a list company, I do recommend two list companies. One of them is called ListSource.com, and the other company is called Listability. Listability. So if you Google search those. They provide good lists. But in my opinion, if you're going to do like hundreds and thousands of mailers, you're going to want to probably sub that out and work on your marketing. Personalized marketing always works the best, meaning someone took the time to write a letter, right, or write a
postcard.
That's going to trump everything. But if you're doing mass mailers, you're going to want to use a fulfillment company.
Okay, great. I already knew about the list source and listing companies. I didn't need the list. I just was asking about the actual mailers, the mass mailers, you know, 100 to 200 at a time.
Sure. Okay. There you go.
And thank you, sir.
Oh, sorry. What's a
no
good
problem.
Place company that you have used so far?
For what? What was the question again?
Skip Trace. I mean, which company? Any good Skip Trace company before?
Well, I wouldn't say I particularly use a company. I use there's a software that we use. I don't know. there's a few out there where you can find the owner. Okay, there's a few out there. So the software I use is not one in particular. Like, hey, this is the exact one you need to go out and buy. I'm not trying to tell you that. But I use we use two softwares in our business. One of them is called REI Black Book.
Oh, REI Black
Book. Yeah, REI Black Book. They'll help you find the owner. And the other one is my REI Pro.
Oh.
Yeah. So they'll help you find like the owner's name and stuff, and you can, there's even options where you can pay for the report right inside of there. I think it's every single one is like $2 or $5, something like that. So it helps with that process.
All right. Good night.
Sound good. All right. Great. It was great chatting with everybody.
Thanks.
And you
thank
have
you
my
very
email.
Much.
If you have any other questions, you can email me. All right. Have a great night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you.
All right. No problem. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.